So now we have Ted, Jenny and Anna from the University of Liverpool.
Afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming to this. Realise it's sort of the end is in sight, so just a little way to go yet. Yes, we'd like to talk to you about the uses of literature in three academic disciplines, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about a study that we've been doing, and Ted is going to share with you some of our results, and then Jenny is going to reflect on what it might all mean, hopefully something. And actually, before we start, I would like to just say that we haven't actually finished our research. We're still in the process of working through our data, so I do hope you don't go away thinking, well, I haven't got a nice checklist of things to do with my materials. I hope you do find something of interest in what we have to say. So, literature uses, obviously quite an important area in EAP. And at Liverpool, we, as most people here seem to, follow a genre-based approach to literature review, where we're trying basically to help students show what they've read in their writing, to be critical of what they've read in the writing from their reading, and also to perhaps create a niche for their own contribution. And I think at Liverpool, we in the last few years have gone down the path of opening more and more discipline-specific classes. So we currently have about, well, over 40 different discipline-specific classes. And by the end of last summer, we were still working on a number of discipline-specific classes that were focused on dissertation preparation. And we were very lucky to be working with a number of departments who were liaising quite closely with us. So Jenny was working with some master's architects. Ted was working with MSc finance students or a contact in the department, and I was working with some PGT engineers. And we spent quite a bit of time talking to the members of staff in those departments, and we kept bumping into each other in the corridor or in the kitchen and saying, I've just been talking to so-and-so, and they said, do they do that in architecture? And we kept sort of coming up with things and thinking, well, what we do perhaps, and we ended up thinking that what we do is perhaps too generic, even though it's called discipline specific. And so we wanted to research that a little bit more. We wanted to find out more, what is this, what are the differences between these disciplines? So that's basically what prompted us. And we thought, okay, well, we'll go ahead and interview these very helpful colleagues of ours, and we'll perhaps do our own bit of literature review. And I'd just like to mention some of the ideas from the literature that we found very useful in getting our heads around different disciplines. So Bazeman wrote a paper in which he compared three different academic papers across different disciplines. And he found that there were some differences. For example, in a biology paper, there seemed to be accepted modes of argumentation. And that compared perhaps with a sociology paper where there wasn't that accepted approach, and the writer had to spend a bit of time at the beginning establishing a framework within which their claims could be presented. And in terms of the claims, for example, a biology paper might have quite established criteria by which to judge them, whereas the sociology paper, the writer would seem to have to be make quite an effort to persuade the reader that their claims were valid. So some of these differences seemed of interest. And actually, Bazeman summed up by saying these three statements of knowledge, i.e. those different texts, are three different things. And in mediating the four different factors that affect them, each text seems to be making a different kind of move in a different kind of game. And we just thought, well, with our sort of discipline, dissertation, preparation classes, are we looking at these different moves and different games in enough detail? So that was one interesting point. We also found Beecher's classification of the different disciplines very helpful. It's obviously a very famous or very familiar categorization of hard and soft, applied and pure. And what is particularly interesting is how each of these sort of groupings that can be classified using characteristics of perhaps the discipline itself. What kind of knowledge are they after? What kind of evidence will they accept? Do they disagree? What kind of questions are they answering? What kind of product do they want to come out with? And these were all also quite interesting when we came to think, well, where would architecture sit in there? Where would engineering sit? And perhaps before we had, well, I think we know, architecture will be there, sort of arty, or whatever. But actually, perhaps after talking to the tutors, I think we got a clearer idea, but also a sense that we don't entirely know, because we're not discipline specialists. But this, I think, is quite helpful in understanding what's going on in different disciplines. Another area that we thought was quite interesting is Bernstein's theory of vertical and horizontal discourse. I find it quite complex, I'm afraid, but one area that is really helpful is the idea of how knowledge is disseminated, and he suggests that there are hierarchical knowledge structures, and these are typical of the harder sciences, in which evidence is compiled and with the aim of developing a more general proposition that's widely accepted. Thinking about, DNA, everyone now accepts that there are these elements and that the DNA exists and whatever. On the other hand, you've got the more horizontal knowledge structure system, where you have a whole series of different languages which are used in areas like history or literary studies, and where they have their own vocabularies and they develop their own conventions of working. And then, actually, I haven't put on there, it should say Wignall. I think Wignall suggested that instead of being an either-or, this could be seen as a continuum with something in the middle, which might be more appropriate for social sciences, where you have different theories that develop and actually perhaps compete to become dominant. And I think elsewhere, somewhere he refers to this as warring triangles, which is quite a nice idea, at least I like it. And I think this is quite interesting if we then think, okay, well, what does it all mean in terms of using literature, using sources for students? The kind of language that they might use, thinking about, well, critical language came up earlier on, didn't it? Choice of vocabulary. But also hedging, it might be different in these different areas. And all those features that we kind of take as read, perhaps, or as very often included in materials, we might need to think a bit more about that. Okay, so where did this all lead us? Well, that kind of helped us prepare for the questions that we wanted to ask for our staff liaison colleagues. And we devised a series of prompt questions that we were going to work with based around the nature of the discipline and how knowledge was constructed and presented in that, and then also around the uses of literature. So just very briefly mention the fundamental issues. This is the nature of the discipline, the questions that we were asking. What are the fundamental issues? Are they stable? Are they changing? Are they open to interpretation? What kind of methods do you employ? Are they standardized? Are they accepted? How is knowledge presented in written thing? What makes claims credible? What's the relationship between the reader and the writer? And then just as a sort of a field, we thought of, give us an example of a breakthrough in your subject, because it might show us a bit more about your thinking and so on. Then we also looked at the uses of literature. How is it used in your field? What's the purpose? We gave them a list of EAP purposes, and there were some interesting responses. How much agreement, again, is there in the literature, and what does criticality mean? These are the kind of questions. Should students use their own voice in writing in your field? And how can they avoid just listening to the literature? And then what about students? Because a lot of the time we're looking at published materials, and is that a realistic thing for our students to be able to achieve. So what did we find out?
Ed's gonna tell you.
Hello everyone. Well, we're actually at the moment just in the quite early stages still of analysing the interview data and transcribing it. Blimey, what a job that is. But nevertheless, there are, I think, some interesting themes emerging, I hope. And I just first of all, I just want to show you one or two extracts from the interviews, first of all, from the architecture interview. I'll just show you these and just give you a few seconds to just look through them, and I'll make one or two comments. So here we go. Can you see it? Okay, and then from engineering, we had... So looking at the architecture ones, I mean, there's quite a lot here about the sort of social significance, public affairs, can't make buildings in isolation, more and more cultural studies. And the interviewee was asking things like, you know, what's the social context? Who's going to be experiencing this building? So there's a lot of sort of social science going on. But there's also obviously sort of, you know, engineering science in there as well. And this, I think, sort of indicates, going back to Beecher's classification, that architecture is very, very diverse, actually. Indeed, it can be, you know, almost from art history to, you know, quite pure science sort of things, really. And a lot of these things are mirrored in the engineering. Again, here, very much stress the applied nature of it. The interviewee said here, you have to understand a whole lot more about the world and the people in it and the problems they face before you can do your engineering. So again, it brought in a lot of sort of social type things as well. And my personal favourite is this one at the bottom. This was said to illustrate the fact that engineering is actually quite sort of multidisciplinary now. You know, we don't make steam engines anymore. So the first sort of really big theme, I think, that's coming out at the moment from this is, well, there's a couple of themes here, but the first one is this idea of interdisciplinarity. And it's very hard to ignore this, I think, in universities at the moment. I mean, in our own work, we've been involved in a project where groups of students from different departments have been working together on a project about greening the university campus, and they're bringing in all sorts of the sort of technical issues and planning issues, and they're all working together and on that sort of thing. And another completely different sort of end of the spectrum, the university's just been reviewing its strategy, and that was launched in the last few days. And this idea of interdisciplinarity cut through the whole thing. So it seems to be a very, very significant theme at the moment. And Anna mentioned Beecher, the tribes and territories, and in Trowler, the sort of recent revisiting of that, this is a big theme in that, and this question's asked, have disciplines been replaced by interdisciplinarity? The related thing, the mode to knowledge production, I think this first came, but I think the new production knowledge, the Gibbons in 94, and this is... I'm sure a lot of you are probably much more familiar with this than I, but just to contrast that, traditionally mode one was where scientists were working very sort of with a great deal of autonomy in their universities, whereas mode two, a nice example of this is the sort of thing like, I don't know, they say the response to flooding in Cumbria, where it's the sort of knowledge is generated sort of in the context of its application, and there's all sorts of different bodies and organisations involved in that work, and it's transdisciplinarity. So there are new methods being developed, not necessarily based on existing disciplines and so on. And it talked about multiple accountabilities, this sort of thing. So these seem to be quite significant themes, and that came through the interviews, and certainly are identified in literature. And we thought, well. there must be quite significant implications of these things for the work we're doing. I mean, just on a very simplistic level, you know, questions about, well, how do writers handle sources from disciplines outside of their own immediate fields? Do they write about them in different ways maybe undergraduate levels? They're looking for a lower degree of mastery of those things. I don't know, but it seems that surely there are some quite significant implications there. Something we've got quite interested in. The second theme, again, it's kind of related, I suppose, but different types of literature. We often think of, you know, a body of literature, and maybe don't distinguish between the different types of sources within that. And it was very interesting in the engineering interview. The interviewee made quite a detailed distinction between different types of sources. So, for example, there was here sources which establish the sector that you're going to serve or the existence of a problem. And he this could be something like a health and safety report, for example. So not necessarily scientific literature. Or it may be scientific literature, we talked about medical work and this sort of thing. And then obviously the scientific literature, and again, an interesting distinction here, he talked about the fundamental underlying science. He talked about dusty old textbooks in the library that have got, you know, rules of thermodynamics that haven't changed for 100 years. But he contrasted that with, you know, the cutting edge stuff that's moving really fast and that might be appearing in journal articles. So a distinction there as well. And then lots of others. Manufacturing stuff, technical performance specs, ISO standards, you know, law, legal things, regulations, all these different types of sources that came into the work that the engineers were doing. And again, it made us think, well, if all these sources are being used, how are they being used? Are they written about in different ways? And well, again, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer yet, but we thought, how could we look into this? Well, very recently, Hilary Nessie gave a talk in Liverpool, and she mentioned this paper, which I'd never come across before, but this tried to give this BEAM idea, gave a sort of classification for different ways that writers use sources. And we thought this might be an interesting way to actually analyse some writing and see what was actually going on in there. With the idea that, you know, a single type of source could easily be used in different ways. But this seemed like an interesting avenue that we may want to go down. Again, related to the different types of literature, some interesting things came up about criticality as well. Students are always told, aren't they? They've got to critically evaluate. We've been talking about it, you know, lots of talk about it today already. And, you know, you see EAP books that have these lists of adjectives, you know, thin and limited and all these things. And we try and teach all this sort of stuff. But the engineering person said this. They're not going to critically evaluate the findings of Professor X from Cambridge. They're going to take the findings of Professor X from Cambridge as cold, hard fact on which they're going to base their work. What he then went on to say is what they will do is sort of talk about, well, for example, the suitability of different design options. They will be critical of things like that, but not necessarily of a lot of the science. So it struck us again, maybe we need to be a bit careful there. We need to exercise a bit of caution when we're teaching things like criticality and not lead them to do something that they're not wouldn't actually be expected to do or that wouldn't be appropriate. Okay, my final slide's from architecture. This is a bit of a it's an interesting one. Put them on the shoulders of giants and hold their hands. This seemed it might have some relevance to criticality. If the point was, you know, show them the greats in the field. And it seemed to me that criticality there is probably going to be limited to pointing out the enormous contribution people have made, I guess. But actually, the main reason I included that one to finish on was because it's just, I don't know, there's something quite uplifting about it, really. So anyway, Jenny's going to finish off. So.
And that will be quick. Okay. So just To reiterate that we're sort of still in the early stages of this, but we're going to try and draw together with them some concluding comments and think about the strengths and weaknesses of where we're at so far. The scope of what we are trying to do, have we bitten off more than we can chew? Quite probably yes. We presented this at an emerging research conference at University in Liverpool, and they said, you're insane trying to do three disciplines, just do one. On the other hand, this is the reality of our world. This is what we have to do in our jobs, and this is just a more formalised version of the ordinary liaison and discussions that we have with departments. So it's a reflection of the scope of our work, really, if we've bitten off more than we can chew. However, part of the result of that is that we are, as yet, quite removed from classroom application. We don't know yet how this is going to feed into our materials, but it's necessary. We can't really get to that stage without having consulted the experts to try and get under the skin of the disciplines that we're not familiar with. Also, I think in our interviews there was some confusion about the focus between published expert writers and student writers, and our interviewees weren't always clear if we were asking about one or the other. The fact is, we're kind of interested in both, but we needed to tease that one out a bit more in the interviews, and might come back to that later. Our interviewees, they're insightful, informed and engaged. I haven't actually specified whether these are strengths or weaknesses, I'll let you decide. But our interviewees were definitely very forthcoming and probably again indicative of some of the developments within ISE. That 5 years ago you probably had to plead somebody to give you information about their courses, and now we all have digital access and people are much more receptive to what we're doing. So the fact that we got three people to sit down with us for over an hour is a reflection of how things have moved on in universities between EAP and academic departments. And also criticality and interdisciplinarity, I can't say any words today, that we're being more critical of our own practice, and this is based on evidence from the subject specialists, and developing our own interdisciplinarity, learning more about the areas that our students are working in. Some of the implications and future directions. Our initial hypothesis was that we were perhaps being a bit too generic in the way that we addressed literature reviews and the uses of literatures. And I think that was a reasonable hypothesis, having spoken to three subject specialists. We were probably right to suspect that. But we are trying to do something about that. And this gives us a means of contextualising the work that we do with students in these different areas. It's also a means of us questioning some of the assumptions that we have about the uses of literature or how different disciplines use literature. We talked about the uses of criticality. Well, is that equally applicable across all disciplines? Do you exercise criticality in relation to the same things? And things like having generic criteria for evaluating sources. Can you do that across different disciplines where there might be different reasons why things would be regarded as current? They're not necessarily recent. So again, questioning some of these assumptions that we have. Also, as Ted mentioned, the wealth of different text types in different fields and how they are used, and the fact that a different text type can be used in many different ways. And also the idea, coming back to the published writer versus the student writer, perhaps that's not a dichotomy, that we need to think about student expertness. We can incorporate student models as well as published models. And whilst thinking about what's a realistic outcome for a student, we should also remember that these are the people who are going to go on to be the published writers in the future, some of them. So it's more of a continuum, really. And something which has come up in many talks today is the positioning of ISE within universities, within other academic disciplines, or the repositioning. And one of our interviewees seemed to bring this quite sort of sharply into focus for us. Generally, we can say that there's better collaboration with other departments. But this particular interviewee, she talked about it in relation to the literature review as well, and the production of knowledge. And I'm just going to flash up. It's a paraphrase, it's not a direct quote of what she said, but it certainly sort of gave us food for thought. And I think if I've understood it correctly, they're describing a move away from interdisciplinary, where you have people working with other disciplines, but very much from their own framework, to something trans, where everything's up for grabs, really. There isn't a blueprint. So exciting times, and very nice to hear somebody in another academic department saying, you're not a peripheral university department, that we are integral to new knowledge production.
So 5 minutes for questions.
It strikes me that something very valuable has already come from your work, and that the questions you are asking the people in different academic fields provides a kind of a blueprint for other people trying to investigate differences and teach them. So I thought they were very useful, the questions that you were asking people in terms of establishing genre.
We concerned there was some initial feedback from a dev at the university that maybe the questions were too wide ranging or too specific, too detailed in some way, but maybe that it was too ambitious. But actually, the three people we interviewed were astonishing. Their ability to really cut through and make some really interesting statements was incredible. They're amazing.
In relation to international students, or were you talking about students in general?
How to answer? Well, we support international students. We don't have contact with them students in particular.
Okay.
But I guess a lot of it was more to do with the nature of the discipline, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So it would it apply to both?
Yes.
It?
And I think some of the answers that we got, tutors were actually saying this is not just an issue for international students, so they weren't necessarily separating them all the time either.
Just a very small point. I'm just wondering on your last slide why you've used the word competing with their colleagues, collaborating on.
Because I think it maybe goes back to this idea of fund chasers. I mean, this was although I think collaborating is would also be valid, but that wasn't what
wasn't
the point that she was making. Yeah.
Some help for you, but one of our plenary speakers is Carl Mayton, coming up from Sydney. If you look at his legitimation code theory, there's a fantastic website, and it really looks at this. His specialisation code looks at the difference between knowledge and knowers in terms of it builds on Bernstein, simplifies it a bit, I do believe. And instead of looking at a typology of dichotomies, it looks at the topography, so you can locate different disciplines. And see, the fantastic studies that have been done in it as well, using this tool. They've studied music, design, loads of stuff, lots of papers on the website. And Carl's just brought out a book, 2015, called Knowledge and Knowers.
Okay.
And his first book was Knowledge Building. But it tells you how to translate what we're doing into classroom and curriculum development as well.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Definitely come and see him.
I think we can take one more question if that's okay, so it's up to you. Who you choose.
I just have a comment, and I just think that I really hope that you will do exactly what Ursula said this morning and write this up.
Yeah.
Because this is what we really need to see happening. This would be perfect dissemination for what EAP scholars, which I think we are doing. I thought this is fantastic. Keep it up and write it up.
Thank you.
This is the difficulty, of course, because we're actually doing this in our own time. We're going to work all day and say, shall we meet tonight and have a chat about where we're up to? And it's very difficult to move on with this sort of thing.
When I said to Jane Ferris, who you may all know from people who are writing and feedback, she said
Okay. Okay. Well, that's our hope. That's our intention. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is
fantastic
for
everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
When do we want to show them?
I want to show them here. Six. And seven. We want to show them six or seven.
how's the week?
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. No, we have to do. Oh, I think we have to do the water in here, maybe.
That's got to go to full screen. Put it onto full screen now and then just come out of it and see what happens.